Okay, welcome back today, guys. I'm super excited today to have my good friend Edmund Wu with me. I'll just give you kind of a brief little introduction to Edmund, if you don't know Edmund already. So he and his family are the owners of Saskatoon's restaurant here in Greenville, South Carolina. If you've never been to their restaurant, I highly encourage that. It's, you know, honestly, this is even before I knew Edmund, it was my favorite restaurant in Greenville, and so does some great things there. But today we want to kind of talk a little bit more about some other things other than just his restaurant. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. And so when I think of Edmund, I want to introduce him. You know, so you know, I mentioned him being a business owner for a long time here in Greenville. I also consider him one of my very best friends. We did some things. We've done some things together. I call him my swim buddy for some of our experiences through some of the SEALFIT training. And honestly, I consider him also a mentor to me, especially in you know, really in life, really. But and one other thing, somebody caught. I think it was maybe a year, maybe longer. Time flies. I think they were doing an article on Edmund, and the lady asked me, you know, could I say something about Edmund? And really, I truly believe this. He's been an inspiration to me when it comes to hard work. I've never met anybody that works harder than Edmund. So anyway, so I don't want to blow his head up too much today, but just want to say really it's an honor, privilege to have you here today. And so welcome, Edmund, to the show. And just kind of give you like a real review. Edmund and I already talked about this a little bit. So my goal with this podcast really is to kind of educate and help inspire people really in the realm of like really human optimization. So we call it the Opti Lab because everybody's got a different perspective and what that means. But really, one of the big things I feel like is everybody's got a story. And sometimes, you know, we see people who we might consider to be, say, for instance, just using the word successful. And, you know, I know from my side of things, you know, sometimes I've looked up to people and think, man, they, you know, like it came easy, so to speak. And the more you get to know people, like it's not easy for anybody. And so so I like for people, if they're willing to do that, kind of share a little bit of their story to where they, you know, kind of how they got to where they are and what they're doing. And then also we'll kind of filter in with that, you know, maybe some points, what I call like, you know, pivot points or hinge moments where certain things kind of maybe influence the direction that you're going. And even with that, some things maybe where at the time you might have thought, oh man, this is a terrible thing that's happening to me, but you look back in retrospect and actually it turned out to be a positive. So I think a lot of people, when we get stuck, you know, it's a tendency to feel down about ourselves or whatever, especially like what's going on right now. Edmund's in a, you know, in the restaurant business. So, you know, I know him. I think we talked a few weeks ago. I'm like, if anybody's going to come out of this thing better, you know, I know he'll figure out a way. And so, and some people, you know, just let it get him down and focus on the negative, where I already know he's already thinking of ways to you know, take it and like I said, pivot and make a positive out of it. So, Edmund, welcome. And if you don't mind, just kind of share a little bit. I know okay. We talked ahead of time and said, you know, we've got a few things we want to kind of cover today. We could probably spend an hour on any of those subjects.
Right.
But just a little bit of your story and, you know, here in Greenville and kind of how you got where you are now and any aspect that you want to share, we'd love to hear.
Okay. Well, thank you, Billy. I it's an honor to for you to have me on this podcast. And some of the things that you said about me, I do appreciate because I do feel that about you. Obviously, one of my best friends, but also an inspiration to me. The way that you train and work out. I'll be honest with you. I have met a lot of, you know, in all my years of, you know, since I was maybe 9 or 10, I've been on this search for. Physical, mental, spirit transformation, and I'm 60 now, and I have tried a lot of stuff, and you know, a lot of stuff was just bunk, right? But it was there. I tried it, but one of the things that always impressed me was of all the people I've met through those travels, like you are literally, and I say this, and not to. Blow smoke up your butt or whatever, you're literally the toughest person I have ever met. And when it comes to working out and training and going for that extra rep or extra set or being steady, you know, day in, day out, not just being motivated for a short period of time, but for a long, long term in all the years I've known you, right? And I say that because it is a affirmation and also reminded me of the importance of that, the importance of staying steady, having good habits, of always having a good work ethic. So you asked me a little bit about who we are. We are, you know, my claim, my one claim, well, I have two claims to fame. My first claim is I was the first Chinese person born in Greenville in the 50s. And I, you know, I don't know if that's absolutely 100% true, but my dad told me that. And since my dad was the first Chinese family in town, and I think he's probably right. And so I tell people that, not that it matters anything, so that's one, my first claim to fame. My second claim to fame is, if there is a mistake to be made in business or whatever, I have freaking made it. I mean, I am amazed and blessed to be where we are today, despite all of those mistakes. And sometimes if I let my head get into a place where I think about some of those mistakes and the money I lost, you know, so as an entrepreneur, there were some years we made a good, decent amount of money. And then we turn around the next year or two or three and gave it all back, you know, just to support the business. And like, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, those years, oh my gosh, we almost went broke keeping our restaurants alive. And so, you know, we are always, my wife and I, right now we're enjoying some success with our new place. But we are always looking for the other shoe to drop. We are always looking. And then when this thing, when this current pandemic came online, back in December, when we first started hearing things back, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, this is it. You know, I'm tracing and I'm thinking, oh man, just let me get through Valentine's, you know, and all in January, it's a big month, February, it's a big month, let me just get through that. And of course, the next thing you know, the thing's here, and instead of a couple of weeks down, now we've been down two and a half months, maybe 3 months by the time it's gone. Probably our profits for the year, you know, we might have to right off 2020 has sort of a, you know, I don't know, one of those like movies you see manifest where you kind of disappear for the year. Kind of look at it that way. But that's my two claims to fame. Yeah.
Outside of, you know, from that side of it, so I know we've had many, many conversations about many, many subjects. So is there you mentioned like some of those, I don't even want to call them failures, but things like mistakes, you said, mm-hmm. or whatever. Well, any of those, like when you look back, obviously at the time you considered a mistake, ended up like you learned from that and, right. and you came back and like, okay, that ended up being a positive thing where mm-hmm. actually on the other side of it, you came out, say, stronger for lack of a right, right. better word. Can you point any of those?
You know, the way I would say is all those mistakes, because I choose to frame them as learning experiences rather than as just mistakes. I mean, some of them were probably just stupid mistakes, right? You know, because when you're young, sometimes, you know, there's this hill there that you want to do and take just because it's there.
Right.
And you just go, well, heck, you know, here's all the reasons why. And there's a, you know, 99% chance I can't do it, but why not? Let's go for it, right? And as you get older, you kind of learn maybe not to do those stupid things, mm-hmm. right? Not to do dumb things. Like Mark Sisson in his first book, The Primal Thing,
yep.
he talked that one of his laws was don't do stupid things. You know, don't drive without a seatbelt.
Yep.
You know, don't go do, you know, don't go skydiving without a parachute. You know, stuff like that, right?
Yep. Yep.
But because I do choose to frame everything I do as a learning experience and falling forward fast. Right, the concept of falling forward fast being, you know, that it's one thing to make a mistake, and you can sit there and get in analysis paralysis mm-hmm. by figuring out all the stuff that you did wrong, and maybe this is why you shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that, and a lot of times that sometimes I do not work very well in groups or partnerships because I do believe in, you know, falling forward fast. You know, sometimes people will want to have meetings about this, and I would say, well, crap, just throw some money at it. Let's just do it this week, and we can meet about it next week to figure out if it worked or not. You know, instead of trying to sit there and analyze it to death and that kind of thing. So are there a lot of things that I would have done differently? Yes, there is. However, you know, this is my thing that I believe in, is that I am where I am today because of all of those. If I could go back and change pockets of time without changing the time-space continuum, I would certainly do that. There are so many mistakes and maybe people I've hurt or money I've lost or things I could have done differently, could have been more kinder, should have been more appreciative. All of that I could do, I would do, but I don't want to change where I am today. Mm-hmm. So you asked me one time, at one point in the early 90s, I had a restaurant on Augusta Road. It was one of three or four I had at the time. But that restaurant was a diner, and it was the Plaza Diner on Augusta Road I had for maybe 5 or 6 years. Actually, it was in the 80s going into the 90s. And it was a concept that I had wanted to open all my life. I wanted to do a diner. It was an 18-hour diner, so we were there for breakfast, lunch, dinner. There were a lot of mistakes that I made that if I could do it over again, we'd probably been much more successful today with my experience than it was back then. But it was not going well. But I finally made the changes to have it on the right track. And it was making money steady, but it also required me to be there for 18. I was literally there 18 hours a day, sometimes 24. It got to be so much time spent there that I ended up putting a shower in there. So if I walked in there, if my manager got the grit started at 5:30, I could walk in there at 6:15 and be the main breakfast cook. And then at 10 o'clock when it broke and the rest of the staff came in for the rest of the day, if I went and took a shower, if I didn't put my contacts on until after I took the shower, I could convince myself that I just got there, right? And so that was the mind game that I played with myself. And I did that for a long time, right? And that was probably not the greatest experience. But what that led to, though, having experienced that, we were sitting there in the 90s, and this new restaurant opened in town called Outback. And Outback was open 5 hours a day, and we were open 18 hours a day. And we all sat there and looked at it and went, oh my goodness. And that was a big paradigm shift for us. You know, here we were 18 hours, they're doing 5 hours, they're doing more business. Now, since then, Outback has broken its own rules. They went public, and now they're open for lunch, dinner, and they're doing all kinds of stupid things that they never did in the beginning. But that was a very negative time. So, you know, we ended up selling that restaurant, and we sold it for a enough money to open Saskatoon. And also, the reason why we could sell that restaurant was also based on my first job or second job after I got out of the master's program at UGA was selling real estate. And for 3 years, I got an education from one of the best minds in the real estate business in Atlanta on doing leases. And if there was one thing I did right, well, there were two things I did right for the Plaza Diner. One was I went in there with a strong lease. So I had options up to 38 years. So I owned that space, right? And so when it came time to sell, I sold to Applebee's. And I had the strength of that, the knowledge from having placed a great lease. And so I was selling my lease, right? The second lesson I got out of that was learning, because I've always had mentors, but I went and got a mentor for the diner business. I went to Frank Sathakis at Stacks Original, acquaintance at the time. And Frank, great guy, nicest guy in the world. He said, yeah, come in. I'll teach you how we do business. So I would go in there and I'd hang out with him 2 days. And, you know, and went back and revamped what I was doing and got that business up to where I could sell it to Applebee's. And then that became Saskatoon. So that was sort of a pivot, right?
Yep.
You know, I think another pivot in this current pandemic is that, you know, so prior to the pandemic, you know, we are rocking, you know, we have three income streams. You know, one of the other things I've learned is to diversify income streams over the years as a businessman. You know, we have the first income stream, which is the restaurant dining. The second income stream, which is doing big events. So over the last 2 months or these 2 months that we've been out, we've lost now 7 weddings that we had on the books and many more parties on top of that. And then the third income stream is paleo meal prep. You know, we do a paleo meal prep program for weight loss, which actually was your idea. And I give you credit for it because 10 years ago, you said, Edmund, you know, I can't remember, you had somebody coming in that were bringing some meals in, that were trying to sell some paleo meals.
If I remember correctly, I think we both tried them.
Yes.
Rob Wolf was doing something. We ordered those meals.
Oh, okay.
And I remember, this is crazy. I remember sitting in the carpool line at, I think it was at Sarah Collins, trying to talk to you on the phone while I was chewing up their jerky.
Right.
And it was the tough, and I think,
right.
I don't know if you remember that.
Right.
And we're like, Edmund, I know you can make better food than
right.
this. And I think, if I remember correctly, I think that's what kind of
how
stimulated
we got started,
that conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but you were after me for months. And because the last thing I wanted to do at the time was to add more work. Because I was, you know, we were making decent money. I was working out all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we worked out, you know, 2-3 times a day, jiu-jitsu a couple of times.
Yep.
And you would CrossFit, and I would drop in for 2 or 3 CrossFit classes and just loved it. I mean, that was the thing, you know. I mean, you know, when people talk about addictions, you know, well, certainly working out can kind of become one,
yep.
you know. But I didn't want to do it, but finally did it. And the first 2 years, it was very, you know, we weren't making any money from it, but we just kept at it. And every weekend we thought, oh, we should quit this because there would be me, my wife, and one guy. Today, I have a staff of 12 that come in just for paleo, just does those meals. So obviously I don't have to do that anymore. But that's our third income stream. And then because of this pandemic though, I've lost 2/3 of that. I've lost the dine-in business. I've lost the events business, even though I am doing some takeout. But honestly, the main reason I'm doing those takeouts is to get me and my wife out of the house for 6-8 hours a day to go to the restaurant. Just to keep kind of busy. But from that, so the first week of the pandemic, I'll be honest with you, I was totally lost. I got my hip replaced that first day on Monday. I was in some pain. I was on hydrocodone for the pain. And then, you know, then the government tells me I can't open for business to take away my one thing that I like, you know, the one thing I like most doing, which is working on my business, right? And so I was just totally lost. But then after that, I kind of got my head together in that second or third week and started working on, you know, I have a ton of projects that's always on the back burner. Some of these have been on my back burner for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years. Well, in the last 6 weeks, knocked out like 5 major ones that I never got to. And so I think that the business will be all that much stronger from having gotten those things done, because they wouldn't have been on my back burner if I didn't think they were valuable, but I never made the time for it. Mm-hmm. The other thing that came to me was, well, you know, before I thought that, well, we had all we could handle, right? We had all we could handle. We were making money. You only have so much bandwidth, and I didn't want to do anything else. But then the pandemic kind of showed me there was a weakness in our business and that we needed to add maybe another stream of income or maybe more. And the one thing I've been thinking about recently, there was a dichotomy that has been going on in my head about from the paleo meals. You know, here I am, I'm feeding a whole bunch of adults, you know, a couple hundred a week, 3,000 meals a week for people who want to lose weight. And they're having to unlearn all these habits that they have taught themselves or their parents have taught them, all these things that they like to eat, comfort food, you know, myself eating rice and potatoes and all that stuff, bread. At the same time, while we're trying to make those changes in our lives because of the way we were raised and the way we have been for the last 50, 60 years, I've been training my kids to eat fast food and eat this and eat that. So my kids have grown up eating the same crap that I ate when I grew up. And while I'm making changes in my current diet, I'm not really making changes in my kids' diets. So I'm raising them to be like me. And when they're 30 or 40 or 50, then they're going to have to unlearn that. And it becomes this sort of vicious cycle. And so I was thinking, well, how do I do that? You know, what is something that we can do? So one of the things that came out of this pandemic, so this idea is 2 weeks old, but we're rolling it out June the 15th, is a delivery concept based on healthy bowls. And we don't know what, we don't have a name for it yet. We don't have a website, not whatever, but we're working because, one thing I do believe is failing forward fast. Like I said, we're not going to sit and mentally think about this too much. We just kind of roll it out. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it'll be a gluten-free, gluten-free menu, vegan sauces, healthy protein, a way that people, a healthy alternative to for delivery. And so people, and maybe it'll be our little stab at changing the dining horizon, mm-hmm. right? So that's sort of two pivots. I didn't mean to go on and on about that, but there's sort of two pivots that I've done. But there have been many, many, many pivots. And sometimes, one door closes, another opens. And sometimes, sometimes the Lord guarantees you some kind of outcome. He just doesn't guarantee you the way to get there. And he doesn't always guarantee the nature of the outcome.
Right.
But you just have to move forward in good faith, with the best you got.
Well, I will say that's one thing. I think even with this, when I mentioned or asked you about coming on the podcast originally, I said I'm trying to take a page from my mentor because I've had this idea probably for at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you talk about, I just want to emphasize something. If people aren't really hearing that message, when you talk about and from my perspective, optimization and just trying to be a better version of yourself and trying to move forward in growth, is I know for myself, whether you want to call it fear or whatever, is sometimes overanalyzing, and that paralyzes you. So, you don't take action. And so that is one thing I've learned from you is that, maybe you have fear, but you don't let it stop you. You're definitely an action taker, mm-hmm. And so, and I've just noticed that, over the years I've known you, you don't waste time,
right.
If you get an idea, now you might be busy, like you said, and have to put something on the back burner, but it's not like when you take action, like you said, this new idea you had, I think you said you had it for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and, June 15th is not far away.
Right.
So obviously you've taken a lot of action on that and moved forward. And I see it all the time. One of the things I see, on our side, from the gym perspective, has always kind of, I won't say it's baffled me, but something I really try to encourage people. I hear people say, I'm going to get in shape before I come see you.
I laugh at that because that is a very common thing.
Yeah.
People say that all the time.
Yeah.
And be it for jiu-jitsu or yep. working out or, yep. Frotch fit or whatever.
Yep.
Because they're embarrassed.
Yep.
Yeah, they don't want to be in bad shape before, but that's the whole point of coming.
Right. But it's the same thing. It's like, what are you waiting on? Go ahead.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. I think when you tap on that, a lot of time is because people don't do that because they're afraid of judgment. They're afraid of, oh, God, if I go see Billy, and Billy, and I'm not in shape, and Billy's going to judge me, right? And I don't want to do that, so I want to get in shape before I go see him.
Right.
Right, which is kind of... It makes sense, but it doesn't make sense.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think sometimes we don't. I heard, we've got Tom Shea coming on the show, right? And I heard him recently because, I know you're familiar with Tom's work. Your daughter, Erin, did the 24-hour mm-hmm. walk. She was an inspiration to me in that. And I told her after the thing, I said, Tom was talking about how tough you were. I said, I promise you. I think she was 16, maybe right. 17. 16 yeah. or 17 at the time. I'm like, For a Navy SEAL, mm-hmm. 23 years in to talk about how tough you are at that age,
right.
I'm like, they never told me I was
right.
that tough. But anyway, but he said something, and one of his big lessons is, honor your word.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're both, we didn't even talk about the martial arts, but we're both, fans of Bruce Lee,
mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I remember from years ago, obviously I never met Bruce Lee, but it was a video or something talking about, being honest with yourself,
mm-hmm.
being honest with yourself But he followed that up with, like, it's one of the hardest things to do. Mm-hmm. And I always stuck in my head. And then, of course, Tom has, you know, one of his big lessons is honor your word. You know, and that doesn't mean honor your word necessarily. It does mean it to someone else, but also to yourself. And he said something recently that caught my attention. He's like, he really, and even in our gym, we have, you know, I think we kind of co-created, like we call it the Alliance Warrior Code. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we had different virtues in there. So honesty was the first thing. It was really kind of the same concept. But he said something recently I thought was important. He said, like, he says he doesn't think people necessarily realize they're lying to themselves, you know, which is kind of what they don't realize they're making that excuse the way we're talking about it. So it's almost like it's not to be judgmental. It's just to kind of give them a different perspective on, like, just take a chance, you know, a second to think about, you know, what you're doing. And I'm sure you see the same thing with the meals, right?
Right.
So someone says, you know, I want to lose weight, you know, and I could say, okay, well, here's a great meal plan. You know, if you're worried about what to prepare and all that, you can go see Edmund. He takes care of that. All you got to do is go and pick up the food. He's going to give you that. And the same thing, they'll say, well, whatever you name it, what excuse before they start.
Right.
And then, of course, I know once they get in the process, we've had some conversations too, some of the, you know, just roadblocks people run into that stop them, you know, even in the process. It goes back to me, I think it goes back to that same thing.
Well, like, yeah, I think it goes back to a couple of different things, and some of these things I learned from you, right? But the first thing, to speak to the first thing that you spoke about lying to your, like lying to yourself or being honest with yourself or being honest with others, for many decades now, it's something that I came up with when I was in my teens, and it was something I would say to myself. I said, well, it ain't good, but it's okay if you want to lie to other people, but you should never lie to yourself. And I remember thinking of that when I was 16 or 17.
Oh, wow.
And I've always gone by that. Now, having said that, I've lied to myself many, many, many times. It's like a blind spot sometimes. Many people, or even most people, including myself, have blind spots. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just some things, and it's one thing I try to teach my children, and where they repeat a behavior, and be it, I don't know, arguing with their mom or something, and it just goes spiraling down this hole that they've been through a dozen or two dozen or 10 dozen times. And I try to tell them, I say, okay, you know, so look, let's analyze this. You know, this is a blind spot. This is what this person says. This is what you say. The next thing you know, it's going down there. So maybe we shouldn't go down that hole. Next time you see this behavior, maybe you should adjust your own behavior. And I know that with myself. I have a couple of blind spots. Now, even when I see it happening, then I go, yes, I know it's happening, you know, to myself, but I still let myself go down there, right? And to the same result. So I think definitely the skill of being reflective and self-critical and understand what you're doing and being mindful of what you're doing, mindful of what you're saying, mindful of what you do and how it affects other people. If you are in a position where you manage other people or you lead other people, for better or worse, if you know whether you want it or not, some people are leaders. And if you're a leader and you have a tribe that follows you, well, you know, you're beholden to them. And so, you know, how you act not only reflects upon yourself, but it reflects and influences them. It could be your children, could be the gym membership, that kind of thing. Now, one thing I do want to point out before I get too lost is when you talked about taking action. Now, one of the reasons why I can do that is that I do have a wife and partner that works just as hard and as long as I do, and leaves most of the business decisions to me. So I know that she's in my corner, as your wife is in your corner, and it's easier to make that decision. You know, when you're trying to do, you know, and not to be melodramatic here, when you're trying to do big things, it's tough to do big things when your other half is going the other direction, right? And so you have to, if you are one and one is three and you're working together in that fashion, going toward a common goal, it's a lot more easier, a lot more powerful. Your efforts are magnified, right? So when you get all the cylinders of everything together when you're training, you're working out, you know, your mental work, your head trip stuff, right? And your diet, right? If you can get all of that together, and, you know, depending on how old you are and how much testosterone you have, male or female, you know, if you can get all that together, there's a point in time where you can do great things. And even if you can't do great things, you can do almost great things, right? So I do want to acknowledge that. Yeah. You know, so both my wife and I do work a lot. I was maybe 12 or 13 before I realized that other people's parents didn't work Christmas Day and New Year's Day and Thanksgiving, because my parents were in the restaurant business. You know, they came to America with nothing and built a relatively successful business, but they worked 365 days a year. You know, so I kind of learned by that. And it's a sickness. I mean, it's a little bit of a sickness, a little bit of disease, a little bit of a workaholic disease that if I'm not working, I don't feel good. And I do understand that. That's a blind spot. But I choose not to do anything about it because I like it, right? My wife, her mother works 365 days a year. She sells fruit in Taiwan. So every morning she gets up at, and by 9 o'clock she's on the train to Taipei, which is 45 minutes away, and she's selling fruit, standing up in a cart selling fruit every day. And except on days it rains. On days it rains, she gets out up an hour earlier because she has a chance to sell umbrellas from her fruit stand. So my wife learned from that. And so typically, my wife and I work a lot of hours. We work maybe 355 days a year. Now that we've gotten a little bit older, we've kicked back a little bit. And we take the holidays off, and we take a couple of days off in the summer to take the kids somewhere. But we do it, and we don't do it because we have to, because we choose to. That's sort of part of our DNA. You know, we don't have a work/social life. We have a life that we have put together, so everything comes from the work, and we have our kids with us all the time. So we wouldn't do that unless we could have the kids with us. If you told me I had to work 355 days a year and couldn't see my family, well, heck, I wouldn't do that. Right. But I fashion a life where I can have the children with me. And the whole reason I say that is that you alluded to my daughter earlier. And so for both of my kids, we have tried to train them and train them with the mindset of this is how we do. This is how we work. This is how we train. This is what we do. So like one of the things that one of your coaches was kind of giving my 13-year-old, she was 12 at the time, a little hard time because she was coming in and I had her coming in doing Parisi once in the mornings and then doing both classes in the afternoon. And Coach Braglin said, well, you know, that's not really good for her. She's not really getting any gains from it. And what I told her to tell Coach Braglin, I said, Coach Braglin, you know, tell her that your daddy says that, you know, that you're a short Chinese girl, that you're never going to do anything physically, and that what you are teaching me is what Mr. Billy taught my daddy, and that's the value of grit. Yeah, so what I want to do with my daughter is, and my oldest, you see her now, she would be in New York except for the pandemic, is that what I want my kids to do, and what I see you doing when you're training, when everybody else is falling off on the side because they've done their 40 hours or 50 hours or 60 hours, you know, I tell my kids, you know, you will just be getting your second win. You know, you will just be going. You will just get going. The first 40 hours in the week working, that's just the warm-up. You know, because in this world, there are, and this is why I truly believe, there are people who the Lord has come down and smite them upon the head. You know, they're the Tiger Woods at one time. They're the, they're the Cobrinas in jiu-jitsu. You know, the Lord has smite them upon the head and say, you will have glory. Right? For the other 99% of us, that ain't happening. It ain't happening. We don't have the right combination of physicality, mental, whatever, coordination, quickness. We don't have that. So for the rest of the 99% of us, for us to do it, we got to put the work in. Got to grind it out. If you believe in the whole 10,000 hour rule, which is why I have my children train so much and do what they do so much, is that if you got to practice, you have to have 10,000 hours of perfect practice to be at a world level. Well, crap, you can't wake up at 18, 20, 22 and decide you want to do that. You know, you've got to kind of do that on mommy and daddy's dime starting when you're younger. Right. And so you got to put that time in. So that's one of the things I really learned. I think when I trained with you for so long, it really reaffirmed in my mind the importance of grit and taking that next step. And when we did that SilFit thing, some of that stuff, in retrospect, 13 hours and 13 and a half hours of training SilFit is nothing compared to the Kokoro thing that you did and Cindy did. Some of the other guys did. For the whole weekend for 2.5-3 days. And that's nothing in comparison with the actual thing, actual SilFit, Hell Week. And that is nothing compared to the guys who are out there fighting, every single day for, weeks and months and years on. In that little microcosm of what we did, I remember one of the things that you taught me was just to take the next step. Mm-hmm. Just take the next step. No matter how hard it is, take the next step. And that's why the thing is, sometimes people say, well, what is it to self-optimize? How do I get there? What's more important? Do I set goals and this and that? And one of the things that we always talked about was having that why. Having a strong enough why of why you do things. But sometimes I think even deeper than that, there is a DNA component of grit, of always moving forward, of always working toward a better thing. Sometimes it's not about a why. Sometimes you're just doing it because you are. That is who I am. And I think it goes beyond. And then, you can set all the goals you want in the world, but if you don't have that why and that's not who you have programmed yourself to be, or that's not who you have decided to be that person, and you don't slowly start to build habits, right? Habits are more important than goals, right? If you can build those habits and you can add those habits, you don't have to do it all at one time. You try to do it all at one time, it's overwhelming, you can't get it done, but you start building those habits one at a time that are good habits, then the next thing you know, you're there. Without having set, you have to set goals because, like Alice in Wonderland said, if you don't know where you're going, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, right? You kind of have to have a goal where you go, but that goal changes. Yep. You may start off with this goal, and it also goes back to the old, I think Brian Tracy or Jim Rohn said, I don't remember who said it, that, you will always overestimate what you can do in 1 year, but underestimate what you can do in 3. Right, so sometimes we Americans, we Westerners, we want fast results. We want to do this. We want to lose 100 pounds in 5 weeks, when it took us, 10, 20 years to get to that 100 pounds overweight, right? And so we want to do that. And then when we don't do it, we don't get that instant gratification, the next thing you know, we stop. And you have this sort of big yo-yo kind of thing, right? And you see the people who are, Ben. Remember Ben who used to train here? Ben was real big on that. Ben was very, what was Ben's last name?
Sims.
Yeah, Ben Sims. A shout out to Ben. So Ben was a very steady guy, right? A lot of times people say, well, I'm going to start this diet, but I'm going to wait till Monday. If Ben decided that he was going to do something, he started that day, right? He didn't wait till after Thanksgiving holidays or after Christmas. And he was meticulous, robotic-like in the things he did. He would go do, he would have that pull-up bar in his backyard or somewhere. Every time he walked by it, he did 5 pull-ups or something. So over the time of the day, the year, or the week, he amassed his whole bunch of work. He would carry that plastic container of his food everywhere, right? He would always, and people like that are more, I think, more successful longer because they have good, steady habits as opposed to me, who's a big yo-yo guy, big efforts, try to do everything, in a position of overwhelm all the time. And then when I fall off that cliff, boom, And if I stay steady, if I could tell people, and what I try to instill in my kids, if I could stay steady all that time, like you, I would be much further along. Well, this is coming out like I'm preaching. No, it's all me talking.
No, that's... Your story is not
right. You get me started on the subject of self transformation, and I will talk your ear off.
I know. Yeah. That's why I'm happy to have you here today. Right. Well, one thing, you know, it's interesting. I had a conversation with someone yesterday. We're talking about goals, right? And I thought it was very interesting. And so it's one idea, you know, that I picked up from Brian Johnson, you know, Optimize.me. You know, obviously, Optimize, you know, it's the same thing, working on, you know, becoming your best self and so forth. And talking about goals as targets. And so what I was mentioning to the gentleman, I said, you know, so, you know, because we've been talking a lot about this, even, you know, during this time where, you know, I've told people, like, I'm not going to, and I hear you say the same thing. Like, some people I've heard say, I've heard several people say, man, I'm bored, like, during this time, because you're not able to get out and do stuff. Like, I'm not bored. You've always got something you can work on, right? We always got something we can get better at. So if you don't have a goal, then this will be a time, like, just take some time, self-reflect. You know, I've done a couple little, even did a YouTube clip on just some basic fundamentals on how to do that. But so going back to self-reflection, he's like, well, and I think the way he worded it was, like, the issue I have with goals is, like, I don't want to fail, okay? And so I think you hit it. It's like the goal is really, it's just a target. It's a direction. So my view is like what you're saying. If you don't have something to aim, if you're not aiming towards something, okay, then, you know, you have no direction. So what ends up happening if you go back and reflect is that you're the same place now that you were 2 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever, because you don't have any direction. You're just coasting. So it's not important to whether or not you reach the goal. The idea is that you set in motion a process and then try to create, you know, create habits to support that, and then you're moving somewhere. And so then, same thing we talked about earlier, like if you, so what if you fail, right?
Right.
If you look at that as just data, like if I can take that and I can learn from it, okay, then I can get better. I can readjust the course. And maybe that, like I said, the why may change over time, but
the why and your goals and that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you think this is what you want.
Right.
But you don't.
Right.
But you end up not wanting that. You get there and you go, oh man, what was I thinking?
right.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been there and I go, oh crap.
Yeah.
What the crap was I thinking? You know, it sounded good at the time. You know, but one of the ideas that you just raised and reminded me about was you're talking about, you know, taking control. So this whole pandemic thing, if you look at it like something's being done to you and you have no control over it, you're the victim, then that's a very different place by saying, okay, this is what's happening and what can I do? Mm-hmm. You know, what can I get out of this? You know, if I'm going to be hurt by whatever, you know, how can I, you know, and a lot of times it is what I call sort of a victim mindset. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm talking about victim mindset, I'm only talking from a American who happens to be Chinese mindset. So I'm not speaking to whoever else, and I'm not going to be tone deaf about anyone else, right? But one of the things I also believe is that if I end up blaming someone, or if I say, oh, well, I didn't get this because somebody did this, and if I ever end up blaming anyone, then I have become a victim. And if I am a victim, then that means I have no control over my fate, right? And I'll frankly be danged if I would let anybody control my fate. So if anything happens, if it's a pandemic or whatever, this, that, you know, my attitude always, well, you know, it was my fault. If something happened, if the pandemic happened to me and it hurt something, or our sales are not where they are, we lost money, we're not making money, well, that's my fault, right? That's my fault. Because if I assume that responsibility, then I can do something about it. You know, if I'm overweight and not healthy, all that, well, hell, that's my fault. It wasn't because this relationship or that business partnership or whatever. Well, it was my fault. And because it's my fault, then I can do something about it. I can change. I can do everything that you're talking about. I can, you know, go back and understand, you know, well, why is it I do things? What do I do things for? And, you know, and set those goals and start building those habits. Because a lot of times, you know, it doesn't take as long as you think. You know, sometimes you're in a situation and, you know, it doesn't take that long, you know. But if you sit there and, you know, one of my favorite lines is motion beats meditation, right? Motion beats meditation. You can sit there and think about it. Do you need to meditate about it? Yes. Do you need to think about it so you're not doing the same stupid things over and over like I sometimes do? Yes. But sometimes you just got to get going.
Yep.
You just got to get that momentum. You know, the it's getting that off the snide, right? Getting off that point that's so hard to do. But if you can get that momentum going, man, you've got power.
Well, you remind me of, I read a book recently. I think I mentioned it on one of the other podcasts. And I won't try to say the author's name because I'll just screw it up. But the name of the book is Are You Ready to Succeed? And I was told about it. Richard got me to, I'm going to try to get on the podcast soon. He's one of the guys with Apeiron. He's like basically my coach for Apeiron with the epigenetic coaching program. And he told me about the book. And basically, in a nutshell, I'm going to try to summarize as best I can is, he's actually a professor in business, but he talks about mental models. He's like, really, if you think about it, so if I listen to you, you have a mental model of how you see the world working. You know, in the way I look at that, and the way I took from the book, it's really, if you think about like belief systems or however you want to think about it, but it doesn't even necessarily matter if that model is correct or not. If it empowers you, that's the key. So, you know, there'll be some things which may be like, you know, I don't want to get into like quantum physics and all that stuff, but even like, so physics is supposed to be like a hard science, right? So, you know, if I get on top of the building, in the roof, and I jump off and expect that gravity's not going to bring me to the ground, then I can believe that all I want, but I'm still going to fall, right? But certain things we really can't prove one way or the other. You know what I'm saying? But how I choose to frame it and how I choose to think of that, the mental model I have, like you're saying, I can choose a victim mindset where somebody else is doing something to me or I'm choosing to have action. And so it kind of reminds me of I can't think of his name now. It's lost me. But anyway, he's a famous speaker. He used to be if I say it, you'll probably remember it. He was actually a minister, preacher. Now he talks over, he's a consults with businesses and different things.
Who is it? White?
He's a white guy. Anyway, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But it'll come to me later. But I remember hearing him talk one time, and he's basically doing this presentation, and his wife's kind of with him, and he's like, something about his wife said, you know, my husband doesn't make me happy. He's like, right. That's not good to say on stage. And her point was, nobody can make me happy. It's to me. If I'm expecting somebody else to make me happy, it has to be kind of within. Like, so can he support me and do things? But ultimately, it's up to me to choose to be happy or not. Nobody else can make me happy or unhappy. I choose that. Is kind of what she was saying. It's the same thing. It's the mental model that you're creating. So that to me is very, very powerful. You know, and we all have them. And so sometimes, you know, we talk about like looking at that stuff. And again, if you don't take some time to reflect a little bit, sometimes you're running on these mental models that actually defeat you.
Right.
And it just with a slight twist, you know, or tweak to that, it just changes everything. It changes your perception of how you respond, and of course that, you know, leads you to growth or whatever you want to call it. And so I know I want to be respectful of your time, and we're kind of running to the end here today. But I wanted to mention one more thing that I didn't mention in the very beginning, and maybe we can talk on this more another time. But I remember a story. So this kind of ties into our martial arts training. So the first martial arts I ever trained in was Aikido. And I remember some guys, I was a white belt, they were talking about this guy that they knew, they heard about. This guy, you know, he goes all the way to Atlanta to train every week. And, he has a business here, owns a restaurant here in town, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking to myself, who is that crazy, some crazy fool that drives all the way to Atlanta to train martial arts every week, you know? And then a few years later, you know, I've done martial arts for a while, and I got interested in jiu-jitsu, and I originally went down to Atlanta to train with Jacare down there. My intention was to go down like once a month, and then I got kind of hooked. And next thing I know, I'm driving down every week. I think I did that for like 8 years. And I'm driving down one day, and I'm like, damn, I'm doing that same thing. And then I met you. So how we met. You know, I'd been to your restaurant, but you know, didn't really make the, you know, I just ate there, you know, and I probably saw you there, but we never really got to be friends with you. And then you started training jiu-jitsu with us. And we started talking, and I realized, you're that guy.
Right.
And so we always talk about, like, inspiration and stuff. So I remember when I'm making that trip, and I'm like, okay, whoever that guy was that was doing it, like, I can do it too.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know what we should have done, because I did that for over a decade.
Yeah.
We should have rode together. And I could have dropped you off at Jacare's and went to my place. Then some of that time, I actually went to Jacare's.
Yes, yes.
You know, so, you know,
we probably crossed
very
paths
possible
somewhere.
That we were training on Jacare's mat at the same time.
Yep. And didn't even know it. Yeah.
And, but that was where the instruction was. And that's what, you know, of course, you know, you look for people like that to guide you.
Yep.
And you look for somebody like that, and you pay the price and you'll do it. But that is very funny. I remember that now. That's funny.
Yeah.
But hey, Billy, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you again. I appreciate the honor of being here. I thank you for being my friend. Thank you for being an inspiration to me. Thank you for getting us to be where we are today. We have you, you know, as a major part of that.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you, man. Appreciate
love you.
And